This is Transistor with your host, Velvet Steel.
This is Velvet. Yeah, you heard me. Where I'm here to talk about trans folk and anything trans. Because I know you're interested. And hopefully, you're going to listen, laugh, and learn. Trans journey. My teenage years, or a portion of. You're not going to get it all in one little chat, but I got some fun stuff to tell you. One of them happened to be when I hit puberty. I got a beautiful, juicy ass. Hormones kicked into play, and my hormones didn't kick in the way that most kids going through puberty would have, because I had a few different things going on. My chromosomes were all out of whack, and I grew boobs, and I did all these other different things, but my ass, holy shit, did that ever suddenly look good in jeans? I didn't realize this myself until someone, when I was in Denmark at the tender age of 16, well, actually I was 14 because I just gotten confirmed. Yes, I just got confirmed. I did say confirmed. Yeah, the whole church, Holy Bible bullshit, blah, blah, blah. But there I was in Denmark and having a grand old time and not realizing that things were really starting to happen with my butt and my pants. Oh, I remember the jeans that I was buying in that time. We're not talking Levi's or Lee jeans or all those other things. We're talking about Angels Wings and Jordache and what was that bitch's name, that rich woman there? Oh, Gloria Vanderbilt. Ooh, I was wearing all these jeans, like literally running down the street, changing my pants in the bush before I hit school. I didn't know that these were strictly 100% girls' jeans, but they gave me a beautiful butt. Whoa. And I mean, even in high school, I had the guys even commenting on my ass, and it was so fun. And I remember in grade 7, I had a pair of white jeans. And I wore those to school, and I thought I was the shit. I mean, I was the shit. I thought I looked really cool, man. I was trying to do my thing. And I remember in geography class, my teacher made a comment on my jeans to the point where this guy, who was East Indian, brown skin, he made himself so embarrassed in that class with the comments that he gave. And I'll tell you what he was in a second. And that the other students caught up on that and like, ooh, you are, you know, making fun of him. And he just blushed for days because he just turned and says, oh, look at you wearing those white jeans, thinking you're so hot with that tight ass. Class went silently dead, and there he was at the front of the class talking about my ass in my white jeans. I didn't know whether to take this as a compliment or not. I wasn't quite sure at that time because I was so screwed up when it came to gender issues and stuff like that. But in retrospect, I'm taking it as a compliment now. So anyway, ha ha, whatever. But back to being in Denmark. So there I was with my mother. She came over. And for some reason, it seemed to be the summer of pictures of my ass. We'd be walking up and down the streets in Copenhagen, Denmark, on the big main walking street that's there. Well, it's a whole portion of downtown Copenhagen, as a matter of fact, is a walking street. And it's cobblestones. It's beautiful. There's parks and there's fountains and it's all gorgeous. I mean, this is a city that's 1,000 years old. And I was there to share in that 1,000th year birthday. And it was amazing. I mean, it certainly blows things out of the water when you think about how old cities in Canada are. Like, well, we're celebrating 115, 300 years. Huh, whoop-de-doo-dah. I celebrated 1,000 in Copenhagen. Anyway, my mom did not get the whole idea of people taking pictures of my ass in Copenhagen. And I thought it was so funny. And well, being the, you know, the attention whore that I am, I didn't care. So I'd politely bend over and it's like, I know my mother was so embarrassed, but maybe there's something to be said about me wanting to embarrass my mother. I don't know. Maybe I did. Maybe I didn't. So while I was there, I developed this name. People started calling me Smukker, and that's Danish for, you know, pretty, sweetheart, those kinds of things. Lovely, all those things rolled into one. So there's really no one particular word to define the word in Danish, smukke, which is what they were calling me. And I just thought it was great. My mother was horrified. Flat out horrified. Everywhere we went, I had pictures of him in my ass. And was I wearing the white jeans back then? I don't remember. But anyway, I knew my ass looked really good. And then back in Toronto, here I was on the transit, the TTC in Toronto, and I was taking trips up and down, downtown, outside, all these different places of town, going to my grandparents, staying downtown. And then next thing I know, I had these old guys trying to grab my ass on the subway, on the bus, on the streetcar. And then all of a sudden, I had money being put down my back pocket. And I wasn't no stripper. I was on the goddamn fucking bus. I'm getting $5 bills put down the back of my jeans. It was really weird. I started calling it butt money. Quite literally, butt money. You know, here I was making butt money. I told my youngest sister about this, and she thought it was the funniest thing since sliced bread. She's like, are you kidding me? Nope. Come out with me one night. So I finally convinced her to come out with me one night. And we were going downtown to my grandparents' place. And of course, we were kind of youngish at this time. I mean, she's 4 years younger than me. So, and if I remember correctly, I was 16. She was 12. Yep. I finally convinced my parents to let me take her downtown to go to my grandparents' place, which just so happened to be on the opposite side of Toronto. So getting to their place was like a 2.5 hour trip on the transit. And that was nonstop travel. By the time we got to my grandparents' place, I think I had $40 in my back pocket. Well, I certainly made her a believer, didn't I? Translation. The art of the pass. And I'm going to talk about facial hair. Yep. I know I've talked about it before, but so many of you want to know about it. I want to know exactly what's going on with the facial hair. Well, it's hard to describe because when you're on hormones and you're doing different things and you've got all this stuff going on prior to hormones and even after hormones, what ends up happening is facial hair, if you've got it growing before you're on hormones, will stay growing. Hormones don't slow it down. They don't change anything. They don't change the color. They don't change the density. They don't change anything in terms of curl or coarseness of the hair. It's going to keep on growing. But if you're on hormones before you start growing facial hair, chances are you can retard that growth, you can slow it down, and you can maybe prevent it from coming in. That's why I always say if someone is identified as gender dysphoric at an early age, go with it. As long as you've got good parents and you've got good supporters and everybody is totally on board with it, you need to have a good structured support network around you. And I really encourage that and really do it. Not to say go out and everybody suddenly start taking hormones, woohoo, like the party's on. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying be supportive. Anyway, back to the idea of having facial hair that is growing. So for those out there that have it growing and have been asking about different things, I can only say what I've been through and from those that I know. I didn't start growing facial hair till I was 29. Yes, I'm 29. I've been 29 for a number. Anyway, so the facial hair that I have is blonde. Some of it's dark. It's not a lot, but it's still there. And I've resorted to plucking. And that's combined with a bit of, I tried waxing, I'm not going to lie, don't wax your face, it burns, it hurts, it does all those nasty ass things that you would ever think it would do. You know, think of it on any other part of your body. You've heard the term Brazilian, all those bikini lines and stuff like that. It hurts like a motherfucker, and I'm not going to kid you. And on your face is so sensitive, the skin there, it'll burn. And I've had burn patches. Well, here I was off on another trip to Denmark thinking, oh, I'm going to get rid of this hair. I'm going to go get my face waxed. Had my upper lip done, my eyebrows done, and a little bit on my chin. I was on that plane headed off to Denmark to meet the family for the first time, actually. And after my SRS, and had burn marks on my face. What a real attractive sight that was, sitting on a plane scarfing back the food and drinking back way too much Chardonnay, but whatever. So don't do that. But plucking, shaving, lasering, bleaching, all those different things. Bleaching, of course, we all know what that does. It lightens up the hair and softens it up so that it makes it easier to get rid of a lot of the times. And if you bleach it so far, it'll actually melt the hair off. You know, you might wonder, ooh, that's really strong on the face. Well, it is strong on the face. So be careful when you're doing it because you don't want to burn your skin, which can easily happen. Plucking is one of those things that I generally do to get the blonde hair because I've been lasered. And I'll tell you, lasering isn't necessarily pleasant. But if you go with the old style laser, which happens to be the Ruby Light laser, and I know I talked about that in the past on these shows, it does hurt. And if you can find someone that's offering that, go back and get it done because you want that done. The new one that they're doing now, the VersaPulse laser, well, that's one of the lasers that actually helps to get rid of pigmentation in your skin by affecting dark purple marks and all these other different things like that. And then you have the IPL systems, which are intense pulse light lasers. They're less painful on the face. They can affect a larger area, but what none of the lasers do is they don't affect any hair that's got no color. So if that hair is blonde or gray or red, chances are it's not going to be that effective on it. Now, there are new ones on the market that are coming out there, like the Nono by Radiancy. I've mentioned this one before, and I'm in the process of testing that. But what that does is it actually solidifies the hair right down to the root bulb and causes it to actually shed from the follicle. So the prospects look pretty good, but it's up to you as to what you have as a budget as well to spend. So for a lot of individuals, I know bleaching, a real close shave, plucking generally works. You're in for a long haul if you got facial hair, but if you're diligent, you can even opt for something like electrolysis, which is pretty much 100% permanent from the start. But if you're up to sitting there having a single needle projected or actually stabbed into your follicle, that's a very flexible style needle that provides a galvanic current and heat, electrical current, galvanic electrical current and heat into the follicle to destroy the root bulb, you're in luck if you can handle it. But most people get numb before they do that. And bleaching will also bleach it just slightly below the layer of the skin, so you're okay, so that it won't show up that way. There's also, yes, people do it, neat. Well, you know, most people think about neat for the legs and everything else. Well, hey, I've slathered that shit up the crack of my ass, and it works great, but I've never put it on my face. And believe me, I don't have much on my ass anyway, so don't think that it's any big major hairy bush going on down there. It's not. Too much information, you might say? I don't think so. You're asking, and I'm telling. Transitions. Cosmetic procedures. Abdominal liposuction. Fun? Not so much. Interesting? Absolutely. The process. Huh. What is it exactly? Well, as I've mentioned before, and I was really going to include the transitions in my previous show, but I didn't, and follow it up with corsetry, only because I was getting so much in the way of mail and talk about translations with facial hair. Anyway, I'm fitting it in now. The process of transitions with abdominal liposuction is something that you need to consider because hormones redistribute the fat in your body. And for me, it was something I really wanted to consider, and I did not like what was happening on my stomach. I was used to having a nice, flat stomach. I'm not going to say washboard, but it was certainly smooth, and it was very shapely, and it was very female. So when I started on my hormones, what I noticed was that I was building up these seriously large deposits of fat on my abdomen, like bigger and bigger and bigger. I hated it. No matter how much time I spent at the gym or how many corsets I put on there, it was still there, and it was still visible, and it was still ugly. And that's my own personal perception of the beauty that I was after and the look and the presentation that I wanted to get. So I didn't want it around, and there was no way that it was going to stop. So basically, I had to wait until I was fully into hormone usage and everything was working fine and everything was well distributed for where it was supposed to be and leave it at that point. And then that process stopped. And that was, I believe it was 3 years from the first time that I started taking hormones that the fat deposits on my stomach grew to a level that was really uncomfortable for me. So what did I do? I went and saw the doctor. I went and had a consultation. And what an eye-opening experience, I can tell you that, because he's very thorough. He was very thorough. And most doctors, if they're good, are very thorough. They'll look at that and they'll check it out and they'll see what's going on. And they'll be gripping and grabbing and pulling and tugging and doing all these other different things, getting you to, you know, get on your hands and knees so they can see exactly how much is there and how much is bulbing out. They'll draw diagrams on your stomach. They'll do dotted lines here and there. They'll ask you what exactly it is you're looking for. And there are so many different processes out there in regards to liposuction. On the abdomen, there's, you know, lipo laser, which actually softens it down. There's a liquefaction laser, which is actually a liquid that's inserted in and it's punctured into several different areas so it can actually soften up the fat and suck it out. There's also a method now that's out there where it is called I'm drawing a blank here, but where they chill the fat. And what they do is they suck it up into this device, and it is so really, really uncomfortable. I've had that one done as well, just to sort of get rid of some deposits. But it chills to a point where it becomes so numb and so painful to start off with. And then when you go home, you are bruised. You are painful trying to stand up. But actually, you are bruised in your pain from any other procedure as well, too. So the abdominal liposuction that I had to start off with as well was the liquefaction liposuction. So here I was having three different spots in my, you know, abdomen put in. And if I count them, I've got one, two, actually, I have more than that. I have five, because the fifth one happens to be in my belly button. So the scar isn't visible. So what ends up happening is he went into those areas. After I'd done my consultation, we determined that I was going to have the surgery done. But there's a lot more to this story anyway, and I'll tell you in a minute. But so we went there, and he looked at it and determined that I was going to do this. So it just so happens at the time that I was actually booked for my surgery, my brother was here in Vancouver as well. Now, this is a side story, but you're going to hear it anyway, just to see how stupid it really all was. And he has chronic colitis. He ended up in the hospital, and it was on Christmas Eve. And he didn't get out of the hospital for another day. 9 days after that, I thought he was going to die. And I was scheduled for my liposuction in January, January 4th to be an exact date. So there I was, looking after my brother at the hospital. My father even flew out to come out and have a look and drive him back to Ontario. And in this process, I was booked. It started to snow. I was determined, come hell or high water, that I was going to get this liposuction. Guess where it was? In the back room of my doctor's office, because he didn't have a practice or a place where he could go and get it done. I think the warning bell should have gone up at that point, that I shouldn't have been getting this done. But I did. I persevered like a trooper. Big chunks of snowflakes coming down. I was sitting in that back room getting all pumped up with all this Valium because I was on Twilight Drip. I didn't want general anesthetic. I didn't want nothing like this. And yes, it was the kind of room where there was the file cabinets visible. There was nothing that would warrant it being a sterile atmosphere. And here are these two lovely chubby nurses giggling and laughing away while the doctor shows up an hour late. And I could think to myself, oh my God, he's not coming. He's not coming. He's not coming. And I want this done. I want this done. I want this done. Because I don't want to have to go and look after my brother, who by now had been out of the hospital at my house with my father there while they fought like cat and dog just before my brother had to get a colostomy. Ooh. Anyway, so there I was getting this liposuction done with these two chubby nurses over me, and I was in and out of Twilight Drip. It was kind of funny, actually, you know, because I would wake up and I'd be like, ooh, wow, oh, this one needs another little shot of that stuff. Let's do this. Oh my God, that's what it was like. It was so horrifying. It was so terrible. And here I was getting another shot of this shit, and I was totally in and out of lucidity. Oh, wow. Memories, memories, memories. And there I was looking over the side of the bed, and guess what was there? 3 liters of fat. I had 3 liters of fat on my stomach. Holy fuck. I didn't think I got that much going on over there. Needless to say, when I did that, what'd I do? I puked all over the floor at the same time. So here was chubby nurse number one wiping off the stuff off of her leg, and chubby nurse number two helping clean it off the floor. It was, it was an experience. An experience to remember. I got up and I sat there with my tensor bandages on, unable to stand up because the muscles had tightened up so bad in there, in my abdominal. But it looked so flat and gorgeous and great and everything else. But I didn't realize that after a little bit, some of the fat would come back. So I had to go back for a revision. Revision. Revision, revision, revision. If you hear those words and your doctor says that to you, be careful, because you don't know what you're in for. Trust me. So I went back to his new office. And there I was in the new office that was all spanking oak walls and everything else. And all I could think to myself is, I helped pay for this beautiful office. Okay, so we went into the exam room, and there I was laying on the table getting another needle stuck into my stomach without realizing that this needle wasn't going in that far, just the surface layers. I had a lot of fat that needed to come out there. So for 5 minutes, the one nurse came in there who said, oh, hold your hand, hold my hand. Well, I about damn near broke her hand off, because when that cannula, which is what it is, it's the wand that goes in to suck all the fat, went in out there, he went below the areas of freezing. Holy shit. I was sweating like a motherfucker. I was drenched. I had my hair all totally soaked. My clothes needed to be changed. I didn't have any clothes to go home in because the clothes I came with was all totally ruined and done. So I had to go home in hospital gowns. And this was for my second visit. The second visit at his office. I couldn't fucking believe it. But anyway, so I got home and there I was sitting there with my brother and my dad still there wondering what the hell was for dinner. I looked up, glanced once, smiled politely and said, "Get the fuck out." Transonic, because I am supersonic, yeah. My life of domination and fetish. How'd I get into it? Well, I'm going to tell you. My first time. It was fun. It was interesting. It wasn't what I expected. And as someone who was always into fetish and always getting things given to me and having fun with that, I mean, you know, I was doing butt money. I was doing all kinds of different things and I wasn't doing anything for it. And I was getting people give me these things and wanting to take my picture and blah, blah, blah. So I was already well immersed in going to fetish nights in Toronto and it was so fun. It was so great. And so, of course, after fetish night had finished, this is 2 o'clock in the morning, I was on my way home. I needed a popsicle. I was so hungry and I was so thirsty and I was a little drunk. And so there I was sitting in my PVC tight skirt, seam up the back stockings, my super sling back patent leather, 6-inch heels, corset, push-up bra. Oh my God, the makeup was really bad. I don't know what I was thinking, but anyway, it was just wide off my face, right into my hairline and beyond, and it was big. And there I was, sitting on the fence, which was a concrete fence of Cawthra Square in Toronto on Church Street, and sucking on a popsicle. Yes, I was sucking on a popsicle. If you could have made a picture of that, it would have been the best porno popsicle porn, huh? And here comes this van, pulls up beside, and I'm thinking, what the hell is going on as I'm looking? And there's this lovely, pleasant little old man inside there who rolls down the window and says, "Would you like to go for a ride? I'll pay you." Huh? What does this involve? Oh, you'll see. I'm good for it. Don't worry. There's nothing wrong. So what do? I happily oblige and hop into that van. And, you know, in retrospect, when I think back on it, I could have gotten into some serious trouble. I mean, I didn't let anybody know where I was going. There was no security set in place in regards to, oh, I'm doing an out call anywhere else, as I would later learn in life about going out to different things and hotel gigs and stuff like that and home gigs and blah, blah, blah. I mean, oh my God, when I think about those things and the fun things that I got up to at certain places and certain apartment buildings, you know. Anyway, those are other stories and you're going to hear a lot about those ones. So anyway, here we are driving in this van to a parkade behind the Pantages Theater that was in Dundas Square, just off of Yonge Street. So I'm standing there I'm sitting there in this dirty van that looked like, you know, mass murders could have happened in the back. And once again, I'm thinking I'm fortunate and I'm lucky. Yes, I was. As he politely explains to me, "I'm going to give you some money. And what I want to do, because you have such lovely legs, is I'm going to come out of the van, I'm going to walk around the van, and I'm going to tap on the door." And all the while, there's me with wide eyes, sucking on a lollipop like I was 12 years old. It was like, oh my God, you're going to do what? Ooh, oh my, I don't know if I can do this. Because trust me, I'd tried before, placed a few ads to get some gigs happening. I was too chicken shit, but this needed to be organic. And it certainly was organic, and it happened in that manner. And it was so fun. It was so hilarious, but at the same time, I don't encourage anybody else out there to do this thing because you could get into trouble, so be careful. But anyway, so he gets out of the van, and he gets out of the van with this cardboard piece of scrap. And all he wanted me to do from his conversation in the van was for me to open the door slowly and slowly put my right leg out of the van. And as I was putting my right leg out of the van, I was to turn and reveal my butt to him that he could see clearly up my skirt. That's another fetish for some of you guys out there. Up skirt. I know you're hearing this, up skirt, and you're going to hear more about that too. So anyway, he knocks on the door. I didn't see him anywhere. I was wondering where the hell he went. And I thought, oh my God, he's got some kind of weapon. He's going to kill me. He's going to murder me. And slowly I open the door. And as I'm opening the door and I put my leg out, I catch a glance of this dirty little old man on his knees, on this scrap piece of cardboard, jerking his cock like there's no tomorrow. Oh my fucking God. What have I got myself into? So slowly, without a thought, I carried on with the session. I didn't stop. I slowly moved my ass out. He looked up my skirt and done, it was over. And that was all of maybe 5 minutes. Not even. And there he gets up. He goes, oh my God, that was fucking awesome. That was the best shit ever. Whoa, blah, blah, blah. Any other, you know, smutty mouth adjective you can throw in there. He was throwing at me. He was so happy. He was so elated. And he took that scrap piece of cardboard with him again, only for me to learn later on that this was his piece of cardboard. I don't know why. I guess it's like one of those sucky blankets that we all when we're kids. It was his sucky cardboard. So he hands me $250, proceeds to drive me back to where he picked me up, and that was that. Yes, I saw him on a regular basis after that, and he was so fun. And it was the same trip, upskirt, out the van, jerking off on the cardboard. What a fun world that was. And here I was with $250 for my first time, with enough money to place an ad and get my first pager. Ooh. Transformers. Toys. Nipple suckers. On the heels of my first time. Because, you know, I knew at that time that nipples were going to be one of those things that I was going to be totally getting into. You know, you've got short nipples, you've got long nipples that stick out from the body, you've got big areolas, you've got small areolas, you've got different colors, you've got hair growing off them, you've got everything going on, you've got veiny nipples, you've got all kinds of different things. But for some people, they have really small nipples. Now, where I'm at right now in regards to teaching people and talking to people about that at my tour store at Sweet Adult Boutique, where I'm actually talking to people and educating people about it there, we have these lovely, lovely things called nipple suckers, and they are exactly that. They're suckers. You put them on, you squeeze the bulb, and you put it over the nipple. Make sure you got a good seal. I generally tell people to shave the hair off a little bit first and put some Vaseline on there so you can get a good, proper seal. And do it on both nipples at the same time, and then let go of that bulb really quickly, and they suck. And they make that nipple stand at attention, and they make it bigger, and they stretch it. They do all these different kinds of things. They're really fun. They're really cheap. And for a good time, it makes those nipples really sensitive. Personally, I like them. I have fun with them. And for someone who's got low sensitivity in their nipples, such as I do encourage these because what they do is they bring blood flow to the area. They also heighten the sensitivity of your nerve endings at the same time there. And, you know, so it makes it good for a finger to brush across that, for a tongue, for any other implement you want to put on there, whether it's a violet wand or some cold ice, or if it's a cold piece of metal, or you want to pierce it, or you want to play pierce it, or you want to attach that violet wand to a pierced nipple. Nipple suckers, they bring blood flow to the area. You want to get stimulation going on. You want to have fun. And generally, most people are getting them anyway to make their nipples a little bit bigger. They're really fun for those different things. And I highly encourage that everybody have them in there. Little tickle box, because I do. My tickle trunk is full of stuff. And, you know, not just the nipple suckers, but I also have snake bite kits, which also kind of, well, they do the same thing. And they truly, truly are that, a snake bite kit. And it's plastic cups that are actually stuck together through another smaller plastic sort of cup inside there that are very flexible. Same thing, put a little bit of Vaseline seal on them, put them on your nipples and compress them and then let them suck, and they'll suck your nipple into the cup, bringing blood flow into the area and heightening the sensitivity. I highly encourage everybody to have some in their tickle trunk. Transmissions. News from around the world. Stuff you're gonna hear, some good, some not so good. People wanna know, and people are always getting up to shit. And here's one for you. Colombian transsexual denied asylum in Spain. According to El Diario de Cádiz, the national court ruled that the individual in question only wanted to avoid deportation from Spain. The claimant, who has been in Spain since May 2000, submitted the petition 24th of March 2011. Okay. 5 days after courts ruled the individual be kept in the Center for Foreigners of Algericas for subsequent deportation. The gender identity of the individual is not clear, and reports refer to this person as only a transsexual. Huh. Okay. On the 28th of March 2011, the UN High Commissioner of Refugees requested that the asylum petition be approved due to the gravity of the situation and also because of the individual's fears of becoming part of a social cleansing in Colombia. The Spanish Interior Ministry denied the application, saying the asylum petition was made after an order of expulsion was put in place, which points to fraudulent implications. Wanting to use asylum as a means of bypassing rules and regulations concerning aliens in this country. In the asylum petition, the claimant pointed to the physical danger for transsexuals in Colombia because of their sexual identity. The individual seeking asylum claimed they don't accept people like me. The defendant claimed suffering abuse and humiliation throughout adolescence. Sorry, I'm not laughing at that, but I do have something to share. According to the petition, Colombian police also ignored complaints about attacks. The national court claims these details were only submitted after the individual was set to be deported. Interesting. Colombia, huh? Doesn't Colombia have one of the biggest rates of transsexual pornography coming out of there? They look to be having a good time. Oops. Hollywood hottie Adam Garcia to judge trans beauty pageant. I love the name of this. Miss Sink the Pink contest returns to London's East End for more trashy cult fun with the celebrity judging panel. I'm planning on going next year, by the way. The annual pageant for transgender beauties is back in London's East End, and this year Hollywood star Adam Garcia will be helping weed out the beautiful things from the coyote uglies. Started by polysexual party promoter Sink the Pink, the event in the UK's capital, Bethnal Green Working Men's Club on the 28th of July, we'll see five, well, it's already passed, but anyway, you need to know about this. See five contestants from around the world competing for the title of Miss Sink the Pink and a fishnet stocking's worth of exciting prizes. Ooh, I want it! A panel of judges will be using their expertise to decide who gets to walk the catwalk of glory and who's shown the door. Hollywood heartthrob and Aussie dance legend Adam Garcia, all of us think he's hot, well I do anyway, will join Radio 1 queen of breakfast Gemma Carney, fashion diva PPQ's Amy Molyneux, Heat magazine editor Lucy Cave, and the Feeling lead singer Daniel Gillespie sells. It's going to be bigger and more outlandish than ever before this year, said Think the Pink organizer Glenn Fussell. Plus, we are opening both floors for the first time ever to herald the return of the patron saint of Sink the Pink, the legendary Ma Butcher. And the equality fabulous Lazy Susan will be opening up Miserable Bitches, their new amazing night in the downstairs club. Plus, as always, the hottest in-the-know crowd in London, Glitter, my shitter, makeover stand, cheap drinks, shows, pole dancing, trash bags, and the most fun, chaotic crowd in London. Fussell describes Sinks the Pink, which already has a cult following among London straight and LGBT community, as a secret club that embraces anyone straight, gay, black, old, young, and if you like to party, we will accept you with open arms, he said. Miss Sink the Pink will run at the Bethnal Green Working Men's Club on Saturday, July 28th, which it already did, from 9 p.m. to 3 a.m., and the show usually starts at 10 p.m. Now, for future references, what you need to do is you need to go to Facebook, and they have a Facebook page at facebook.com/pages/sink-the-pink. And I just want you to know that although it sounds campy and fun and everything else, it's a very serious event, and the names of the individuals that you're hearing, although campy as well, are also very serious trans individuals who have been in the forefront of advocacy and political activism. And I'm going to read another one for you here as well that I think really, really, really pertains to what's going on in the UK. Ashley April Project tracks UK trans lives over the past 70 years. A project which aims to chart the lives of transgender people living in the UK over the last 70 years was launched July 27th. The £250,000 project run by Liverpool-based LGBT organization Homotopia from July until December 2014 will feature workshops and opportunities for members of the transgender community to share their own experience, culminating in a major exhibition at the Museum of Liverpool. The exhibition will use April's personal collection of documents, photographs, letters, newspaper cuttings, and television clips to chart her journey from George Jameson, born in Pitt Street, Liverpool in 1935, through her early career at sea with John Prescott to cabaret performance and for Einstein and Dalí. It will also cover her life-threatening gender reassignment surgery in 1960, yes, done that long ago, as well as her career as an actress starring alongside Bob Hope, friendships with actors Peter O'Toole and Omar Sharif, and becoming a Vogue model and marriage to a future peer of the realm. Ashley is known as the first Brit to be outed as trans in 1961, and more recently, the 77-year-old has been at the forefront of transgender equality campaigning, winning her a Member of the Order of the British Empire, the MBE honor, from the Queen this year. This is a project of national significance charting the shifting social attitudes towards gender and sexuality using personal effects from April's archive, said Homotopia director Gary Everett. We have over 500,000 people will enjoy the final exhibition thanks to our collaboration with the Museum of Liverpool. We are looking to capture the memories of trans, lesbian, gay, and heterosexual people who remember April and can tell us of their experiences and the impact they perceive April to have had on the movement and marginalization and prejudice towards equality. Ashley says she is very flattered that there will be an exhibition based on her life. She said, "This is already a special year for me. For me, as I'm to receive an MBE this autumn for my work campaigning for transgendered rights. The April Ashley exhibition will open in October 2013, and I believe there is a website for it as well. You can look online at www.aprilashley.com. And I just want to say as well, April Ashley has been a pioneer and a beautiful, beautiful woman. And at the age of 77, she knows her shit. And I highly encourage everybody to get involved and have a look at this because this makes me proud. Transcription. A street question. And when I say street question, I mean from a fan here in Vancouver who came up to me on the street and asked me, does being public crimp on my personal life? Well, it depends on who you're asking. I mean, for me, it doesn't really bother me. I know that when I've got things on the go, I need to make it very clear to individuals that I have to go, I have to run, I'm with friends, I'm with family, I'm doing something. But at the same time, I'm also there to stop and say hello and, you know, give people the right to say hello and acknowledge that they're there because I'm proud and I'm flattered and I love everybody. And for someone like myself who's put myself out there in the public eye doing, well, my community activism and all my support groups and all my different things that I've done for violence in the West End with my nonprofit group Weave, which is West Enders Against Violence Everywhere, as well as my trans work, I love being out and I love being public and I love meeting people. I love saying hello. So for me, it doesn't crimp my life, but I know my partner and I know some of my family when I'm inundated with different things and I get questions and I get, you know, asked to do this and do that and stuff like that, it kind of bothers them. But at the same point, they realize that this is where I'm at. This is my life and this is what they need to understand and enjoy because it's not going to change. I'm going to keep on moving forward, doing what I'm doing and fighting for the rights of everybody else and enjoying my life and having a good time and making people truly listen, learn, and laugh.
You've been listening to Transistor with your host, Velvet Steel.